Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hope everybody's doing well today. I want to welcome Stanfield Gray to the Unimpressed podcast today. And I'm unimpressed that I didn't know there was a tech community in the South, and you've been building this tech community in the South for the past 10 years. And welcome to the show, Stanfield Gray.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here, man. Yeah, 10 years ago, I was going to launch a tech summit loosely modeled on Ad Age Digital Conference, South by Southwest, and people laughed at me. They said, you know, there's no tech in the South, or it's small, or, you know, there's not enough people in the Southeast to pull over to Charleston. And I thought, well, there is, but it's been hidden and it's just, you know, not acknowledged. If you go back in history, actually Dell Computers kind of revolutionized the supply chain on desktop computers. Tim Cook's from Alabama. He leads, you know, most powerful tech company in the world, arguably with Apple. You know, Bezos has
let's stop right there.
Yeah.
Tim Cook from Alabama. What part of Alabama?
I don't know the town. That's a good question.
Really?
I have to look that up.
Really?
Yeah, so he went to the University of Auburn.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Sheryl Sandberg grew up in Miami. You know, she runs operations for Facebook. So there are all these, you know, powerhouse tech experts and gurus from the region, but they typically all went to Silicon Valley, New York, or Boston, you know, to grow mm-hmm. a company and scale it. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, what can we do about that in the South? You know, I was frustrated when I graduated from college. Everybody had to leave here to work at a high level at a major tech company. You know, mm-hmm. those opportunities just didn't exist if you grew up in Spartanburg, where I did, or Asheville, or Atlanta, even Charleston. And so fast forward and looking around 2007, 2008, you got the advent of cloud computing. You've got the launch of the iPhone. And all of a sudden, you know, people can work in different locations, different regions. So the working idea behind Dig South was, how do we pull people together from startup ecosystems or tech companies around the region, get them in one place to talk about how they scale, raise capital, how they recruit talent, do all the things required to scale that company. So that was kind of the working model. And, you know, so we weren't pretending that any one city in the region could compete with Silicon Valley for all those assets. But the idea was people in the South like each other. You know, we tailgate, we party, we go to Nashville and Charleston and Miami, and people know each other and do business. So in the aggregate, if you put all that together and swirl it into something really interesting, then those companies could scale and grow and succeed in the South, as we like to say.
Backing up to that thought process, now your story is, where'd you go to college?
University of South Carolina.
All right.
You went to Gamecock.
Gamecock. I won't hold that against you, okay? Because I'm a big Tar Heel fan, you know? And actually, I dated a girl.
My wife's a Tar Heel, so we're a house divided.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what did you do when you got out of college initially?
I went to New York, and I interned at Spin Magazine. And
okay.
So I was really into the music scene. You know, I played guitar and a couple bands, and I wanted to be a journalist and get involved in the music business as well. So I went to New York. Then I ended up coming back to take a job with crazy out of left field curveball, the congresswoman who was running for lieutenant governor. I grew up with her son, knew her well, and she hired me to, you know, help with press releases and just kind of and I ended up raising money for her eventually and being, you know, head of the fundraising.
And who was this?
Liz Patterson.
Liz Patterson.
Yep.
Okay.
Amazing woman. She was first female congresswoman from South Carolina, you know, 3-term. So I worked for her. And then I kind of went, well, the politics, maybe not my world here. So I dove back in to grad school, went down to Ole Miss, ended up playing in bands there, working for Living Blues magazine, and I ended up managing a studio called Sweet Tea for Dennis Herring. So Dennis produced Modest Mouse, Buddy Guy, Elvis Costello, Counting Crows, all these bands. So I got involved in that.
So now let's slow that down, right?
Right.
Now you had obviously an artistic side in the music world. Tell me a little bit about your thought process of your writing and music at that time. Obviously, right. We talked about having to supporting yourself and your artistic mm-hmm. ability of being a musician. You know, how did you straddle that?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
In this part of the world.
Yeah, I mean, John, that's an excellent question. So I was an English major, and I've been writing since I was a kid. You know, I mean, I was just always writing stuff, really obsessed with The Who and Rolling Stones and a bunch of great bands, The Clash. And so I started channeling what I was writing into songs and thinking, okay, I like the storytelling aspect. But then when I worked for Dennis and I got in on the production side and I'm, you know, recognizing what's happening there, that was exciting to me. The technology was fun. You know, so I liked learning about what board he was using, the type of microphones, and, you know, how you produce a song and make it, you know, from what it sounds like a demo of a guy sitting in his living room into a massive epic song you can play in an arena. So, you know, as that was happening, the key thing I think that happened really was Napster. You know, so Napster comes along, people are stealing files and sharing them, and I was sharing them too. And you could tell something big was happening because all of a sudden the record labels are suing the fans and they're suing Napster and they're trying to put up a wall against technology. But technology can't be stopped. You know, mm-hmm. It just evolves. Mark Andreessen said software is eating the world. Well, it already has. Everything we do and touch is technology. So during that period for me, it was a revelation. Like, okay, musicians often were innovative people anyway, or, you know, creatives that got involved in the production and had to use technology to do that. So it's a natural fit. And my buddy, my best friend growing up, played in rock bands, killer musician. He ended up working for the guy who wrote She Blinded Me with Science, you know, yeah. And they ended up programming ringtones for Nokia. Uh-huh. And so, you know, he kind of fell into it. He becomes a programmer and coder and is involved in those sorts of things, you know. So for me, there was no separation between art and technology. They coexist. Like, without music, nobody would have bought the iPhone initially, you know, smartphone. It was for all that content, for the video, music, all the cool stuff in it. Mm-hmm. So the tech was enabling creators to share what they had. So I'll pause there.
Well, if you look at that time period of Napster, and a lot of people don't know that, and sometimes things are cyclical, right? Mm-hmm. So at that time when Napster hit that market, there were a lot of labels.
Right.
A lot of labels.
Yes.
And really the model of labels then to get a record deal was built-in numbers, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, how many people are you bringing in as an established indie artist, right?
Right.
And that, you know, the labels ran off that model. And if you look now, social media, right, it's about numbers to a talent, uh-huh. right? This was more physical, I guess, in a way. Where were those numbers? Were they on, like, MySpace back in the day, or what was those
numbers? MySpace, but people were still paying attention to Billboard, you know, yeah. the records you sold, and maybe how many tickets.
But I'm saying, like, to get a deal.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
saying
yeah, yeah.
to get a deal,
sure.
to get a deal with one of those labels back then during this Napster time,
yeah.
they wanted the labels, because I was in music videos at that mm-hmm. time, and that was mm-hmm. kind of my start of mainstream, you know, higher production, right? Mm-hmm. We did a music video for Puffy, How Did You Know, and it was that might have been a little after. That was 2004. but seeing some of these labels operate. So there was these mass amount of labels. Napster comes in, creates this technology. All the labels shrunk back to like four or five majors,
right
at that time because of the tech.
Yes.
So
yeah. So everything starts shifting to MySpace and then Facebook and Spotify, and you know, all these platforms arise, you know, Apple Music, et cetera. But you know, for me, like, well, disruption is always going to blow a hole in any industry. You know, when tech disruption happens, there are a lot of winners and a lot of losers, and people have to be adaptable. You know, it's you know, go back to, I'm sure that, you know, people who made wheels for wagons and rode horses were upset when the first car comes along in the Model T, and they've got to adapt. It's very similar to what happened in the music business, and it was painful during that transition, but ultimately I think it empowered more people to create their own music, put it out there, control their careers, do what you do, you know, working with them to build their own numbers, their own case, without needing the label to necessarily do that. Labels are important for distribution and a number of other things, but that today you can do it yourself.
Fast forward to this day and time, when you look at that, right? Nobody, you know, when Apple got in the game, you know, Apple's pretty much controlling music right now, I would say, right? So they put up all the big money for the catalogs. I think the musicians didn't think that through. They bought pretty much everything, I think, except, you know, like a major catalog. I think the Beatles or something they didn't get. And then did they finally end up getting that catalog?
Not sure where it wound up eventually. Michael Jackson owned it for a while.
Yeah. So, you know, when you think about that, that setup of Apple coming in after Napster, the reduction of multiple labels in the industry, it goes back to the big four or five. I can't remember how many there were, right? Now you have, you know, Apple come in, you know, you have all these different levels of tech coming in, buying catalogs, setting us up for this day and time to enable someone to produce their own album and deliver their own content, you know, the right way. So if you look at the positioning of labels today because of tech, right, it's positioning to me with like touring, right? I mean, where are the labels really, you know, what is their functionality? I mean, from your perspective, understanding tech, where do you see, what is the next wave of transition in the music industry because of tech? What do you see, have a vision with that?
I mean, this is all going to shake out in Web3 and the metaverse and what people think of as that, because those things really are kind of nebulous at the minute. They're just sort of up in the air. But NFTs are obviously, I think, an important step in that direction, where an artist could turn a song into an NFT. You know, they could use the blockchain to kind of better track where the royalty is going, and eliminating middlemen and trying to eventually direct the funding back to themselves. So it's an incredible time for creators. But of course, big incumbents, big players have a lot of turf to protect. And they're not just going to give that up willingly. So, you know, your major labels and your platforms, Apple, Amazon, Spotify, they're not just going to willingly say, yep, blockchain won, you guys have decentralized it, we're out. Yeah. No, they're going to, you know, dig in and find out how they can, you know, kind of acquire, so they can remain relevant, but how can they get in that game? You know, and you'll probably see one of these platforms transition like an OpenSea has, you know, with NFTs, except specific to music, specific to certain genres, and they'll figure out, how do we cut these deals? How do we gobble up enough artists to make, you know, something that the general public understands? Because the general public's not going to visit 200 websites for their music. You know, we're not going to go, oh, you know, I want to see these videos. We're going to go to 50 different platforms. It's all going to shake out, and there'll be a new version of YouTube, for example, for, you know, music videos or whatever that is. But I think that the important part of the blockchain and the NFT and the technology space and tokenizing things is giving the fans something that they can carry around with them in a digital wallet, show off and share that they're part of that tribe. This is my community.
Tokenizing. We should trademark that.
Tokenize. I think it's
Graham, write that down. Tokenizing. We're going to trademark that.
Right. It might already be trademarked.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the way I see it. Is there, you know, a lot of people are exploring DAOs or, you know, decentralized autonomous organizations where people own it themselves as a group. You know, we'll see if that can really function that way or if it requires more centralized authority and leadership to make it work. You know, we've all tried to have too many cooks in the kitchen or see what it's like when you let 20 people make all the decisions. It's a lot harder than two people, three people, one person.
Yeah.
So I'm rambling here, but I think it's right now it's like 1999, 2000 for the internet, except it's exploding into another area that's more blockchain NFT focused.
Well, that's what, you know, I jumped ahead on the timeline here, but that's kind of what I was trying to say was the Napster, the whole Napster thing shook up the industry, right? You had that whole deal. So now you have, you know, tech came in, bought all the music. Now we're at another crossroad of that kind of world, right? And it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. So backing up to your timeline, right, and just getting in your head a little bit, what is your thought process in life at this point in your career?
Great question. So I think it's pretty similar to when I launched Dig South in a way, is that I was always interested in the novel or the new, what's happening, and the intersection of art and technology. You know, because to me, they coexist in this way that can't really be separated at this point. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I got into Dig South in a way where I was running the first mobile app for the College of Charleston. So I led that project. It was a walking tour. We put it together. We put it on that, you know, Apple Store in like 2009, I think. 2010, 11, I had the idea for Dig South, and we launched it in 2012 in that summer. And so
– but your framework, I'm saying if we went back to – you know, you went from Spin Magazine.
Right.
Liz Patterson.
Yep.
Right. And then you're with who again? What was the guy's name?
Sweet Tea, Dennis Herring.
Dennis Herring. Okay. You didn't know about Dig South then, right? No. You didn't. So right. What was going through your head then and where you wanted to take yourself being this,
right,
you know, creative, intelligent type of personality?
That day, my dream was be a songwriter and make enough that I can play venues and tour myself, but have other people cover those songs or invest in them in a way that, you know, brings in plenty of royalty revenue. So I was still wanting to be in that game. But it was so difficult to make any money, and that whole industry was just imploding at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, and actually I got paid in 2012, 2013, I got paid, 2005 to 2015, when I used to write a lot of articles and reviews, the pay went down over, you know, a 10-year period because magazines were dying. You know, the rise of Facebook, social media, and everything else, all the ad revenue was gobbled up by Google and Facebook. And so magazines died, newspapers died, record labels were getting crushed by Spotify and Apple. And so
great writer.
Yeah.
But, English, right? And then this, you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I'm running out of room here.
Yeah, and I thrive on, you know, adapting and chaos and all that. I think it's exciting. It's fun. Mm-hmm. To me, it's not threatening to my environment or my job or whatever, because I just say, well, I'll just go run toward that and see what happens. It seems interesting. It's cool. You know, I don't like fight against it. Mm-hmm. So that's always been my position, is like, you know, just lean into whatever the disruption is, whatever's interesting. That word's overused, but whatever's happening, evolving with technology, music, the arts, just keep following where the fire is. You know, there's some heat around it. And then, you know, I'm a convener of people at Dig South. So how do we get all of these, you know, communities together through our Dig Nation, our member group, through Dig South Tech Summit, and bring in the innovators, entrepreneurs, founders, the VCs backing it, funding it, put them all together and let them figure out where the magic is and what's happening. So that's been my role in the last 10 years, is bringing people together. But now I'd like to build some platforms, find some ways, some things to do around that kind of that center, that culture we've created, and explore what's happening in Web3.
So you know, you're writing a lot, you know, and then what led you to College of Charleston?
So I moved to Charleston to play in a band, and was doing that, met my wife, fell in love with her. She was, she had launched a publishing company. She had a referral based directory for women called Little Black Book. a little black book for every busy woman. And so LBB was franchised to seven other cities, and I was trying to make a go of it playing music and just taking side jobs at the Halsey Institute. I worked for the city of Charleston running contracts for Piccolo Spoleto. I did operations, farmer's market. So I'm just like your typical artist trying to do anything to survive while I'm trying to play, write music, play in a band. So entered the College of Charleston. It was a good opportunity to do PR, to write for them, get involved in projects. But I really wanted to move out west to San Francisco, where everything was happening, blowing up. All these companies were on the rise and it was exciting. But Sonny had franchised her business and it was doing well. And we thought, and we loved Charleston. We thought this is an incredible place, but I couldn't make enough money here. So she said, I'm not going to move out there if you're just going to wait tables and that kind of thing and try to figure it out, only if the opportunity is greater than what we have here. So I couldn't land that job. And then the tech bubble burst in 2001, 2002. Nobody was hiring the same way. It actually would have been the right time to be there because, in the middle of all of the new stuff coming. But, we didn't, and I'm very glad we didn't, because we laid down roots here in Charleston. It's an amazing place. I love being in the South. And Dig South was my attempt to pull in Silicon Valley and Boston and New York and make a version of that in the Southeast where I could help people find the, we break it down to content, contacts, and capital opportunities. How could I help them do those things? So we create our own little version of tech, and why should it all go to the West Coast? Why shouldn't we do our own thing and be inspired here?
Absolutely. I mean, how long were you at College Charleston?
I was there for about 10 years.
About 10 years.
Yeah, almost
10 years. And then this seed idea started there, right, of Dig South?
Yeah. Well, it was a combination of all the things I was interested in. So sure, I was running the mobile app. They sent me to the Ad Age Digital Conference in New York.
Yeah.
I looked around and Arianna Huffington was the closing keynote. She was just about to sell HuffPost. Dennis Crowley, I think his name is, who founded Foursquare. Jim Bankoff, who ended up is now chairman and CEO of Vox Media. He was there. I connected with him. He ended up being a speaker at Dig South years later. So I saw this and I thought, this is coming. This wave is coming to the South. And people aren't aware of it yet. So when I pitched the idea of doing Dig South in Charleston, to people and went around and shopped it, I said, the people who got it realized, yes, I can see it. I'm holding it on my phone and there's a new app every day of the week, And so, out of that, I was frustrated in my current job because it's a great place to work. But for me, I'm an entrepreneur. I wanted to build other things, do things outside the scope of my job. And the job was great, but it has a narrow scope and it's well defined. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to today, and I'm become good friends with the president of the College for Charleston. He's a strong supporter of Dig South, invited us to bring it back on campus. We have a great relationship with the Gilliard Performing Arts Center, where we've also hosted Dig South. So, we've been able to maintain those ties and build them into something much bigger, beyond my original vision.
I think everybody, and I think I say this a lot on a couple of my podcasts, everybody has the same sensitivities, right? And some of these cliches that I think people anticipate in different parts of the country, to me, are kind of naive to what someone can accomplish anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world, right?
Right.
And we discussed that a little bit, and I think the South has realized that cliches don't really matter, right? And I told you, this is something I think is like was way ahead of the thought process. Right. Mm-hmm. You didn't know when you did start this thing, this pandemic was going to hit.
Right.
The pandemic hit, unfortunately. And now we're coming out of this pandemic and, there's different things settling. And now you look, you're a smart guy.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that, but I'm doing my thing.
Yeah.
I mean, what's exciting to me is, I guess I would call it the undiscovered South, or like you're saying, if you go beneath the cliches. So we all love barbecue. We love football. I love cowboy boots. I love the South. I love all those things. But that's just one layer.
Yeah.
And beyond that, there's a whole lot of people doing really cool, creative things with technology that are, dreaming up new novel ideas, whether they've got, building e-commerce platforms for their business or they're, you know, doing things on social media like you are and launching their own podcast. There's all this stuff happening beneath that layer that is, I think, a new day for the South. You know, there are a lot of forms of music, a lot of different ways to approach, you know, technology, to approach scaling your business. That you, MailChimp just sold for $14 billion, founded, you know, there in Atlanta, fantastic platform. And those things are often talked about in the business context of the business community, but that's also the culture of the South. That's, people are working, you know, Magic Leap was in Florida for a while. They're working on metaverse and virtual reality and mixed reality. So, you know, these things are happening in Epic Games, you know, is based in Raleigh, Durham, and people love Epic and play, you know, many of their different game brands, and they're multi-billion dollar company. So that's also the South to me. You know, that's that is a really important facet that I think when people say, what's the South? And then nationally, they'll say, oh, shrimp and grits or barbecue and all this stuff. And those things are awesome. I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying that there's another layer of creativity, technology, outside the box thinking, different ways of approaching it that often are happening here in towns all over the South that aren't looked at through the same lens, or we're not given the credit for that.
Well, I think you can do anything you want to do if you have the right mindset. I don't think it matters where you're at. I think it's creating, you know, we talked about creating a culture.
Right.
You know, and how we could integrate what we do conveying a tech approach, but through, and with entertainment. And we're trying to figure that out as well. And there's other companies that are coming to Charleston too. There was, you know, you told me to go check out, Park Circle, right? What is the company out there? Isn't there some kind of tech company that set up shop out there in North Charleston? What was that company
you're talking about? I'm thinking of that one. I don't know. I mean, Boomtown is, you know, on the Upper Peninsula, but not in Park Circle.
Or there's one in Daniel Island too. Isn't there a couple of companies over there?
There's several small shops, you know, both places. The name's escaping me at the moment, but I know what you're talking about. I mean, if I strip it all down, you know, really for me, it's like, well, my kids grow up, it'd be cool if they could stay in the region if they wanted to and scale a company, or if they want to move somewhere else, that's fine. Yes. You know, it's their future. But it would be awesome if they had opportunities that I didn't have as a kid, where we had to leave if you're going to work at a, you know, high level at any of those other companies. So that's kind of what it comes back to for me. You know, how do we, and we're not exclusive to the South at all. The idea is, let's make the world come to us now instead of us always having to go out into the world, you know, to grow that company or find the funding or the talent. Let's make them come here and do business with us.
So. And if you live in the South, this is something to think about. And we, you know, and this talk about cliches and limiting your thought process.
Right.
Right. We talked about your daughter, Stella, right? She's an amazing artist, right? And, you know, mom and dad, in a way, in the South, hey, we got to, you know, how does that translate to economics, right? I mean, that's the initial thought. I mean, people in the South are, you know, they're very like, my parents are very, you know, blue collar, won't, A, you know, your life should be A, B, C, D.
Right.
You know, so I think if you live in the South, sometimes there's a overbearing thought process of that on how to make money and so forth. So you talk about your daughter Stella being a great artist, and I said, you know, mom and dad's initial thought process is, what kind of job is she going to get? But maybe she dives deeper into her passion in this day and time with things like NFTs and creating a brand for herself, being an artist.
I think that's it. Yeah, I think sometimes we're trapped by our traditions in the South into what you just – you nailed it. It's a fixed mindset.
Yeah.
So, you know, you lock things into their little box or their column, and you say, well, I've got to work within that framework. But the scope of that's infinite. It could be whatever you want it to be. You know, so just trying to pass that along to her to dream a lot bigger. You know, don't accept what people are saying, this has to be that necessarily. I mean, be wise about it, smart, don't make crazy decisions, but be open to infinite possibilities.
You have an event coming up May 11th through May 13th, and we're actually putting on a comedy show there May 12th.
That's right.
Right? So that's going to be a lot of fun. So tell us a little bit about what you got going on, who's committed to coming to the event, and who's the speakers and so forth right now in the game.
Yeah, so it's real early in our as we book speakers, but May 11th through the 13th will be Dig South Tech Summit at College of Charleston TD Arena. And so, you know, we're bringing in Robert Tursik. He was the very first keynote speaker we had 10 years ago. He's a leading expert in digital media. He launched one of the first video streaming platforms. He was the president of digital media for the OWN network, Oprah's network, worked for Sony before that in digital media, MTV in the early days. And so Robert is a really dynamic thinker. He's going to take us deep into Web3 and what that looks like, what the pitfalls are, where the promises are, the opportunities. Then we're going to have Jay Bailey. He runs the largest entrepreneurship center, the Russell Innovation Center in Atlanta. He works with black entrepreneurs, make sure they get their opportunities and focus on different ways for them to raise capital and find, you know, assets and you know, whatever it takes through that accelerator program to succeed. So Jay's got a great story to tell. Then we're booking a lot of people who are well-versed in blockchain, NFTs, fintech, health tech. We'll be looking at social media, influencers, you know, all the things related to emerging technology in the digital economy. Many of those topics we'll cover. But our tracks are emerging technology, scalable business, and digital marketing. You know, so things fit under those umbrellas. We'll be 2.5 days. We're bringing back comedy this year, which is awesome. We had Dusty Slay in the second year of Dig South, and we used to have a lot more entertainment. We're going to infuse that back into the programming, make it a lot more dynamic with Bang Productions. So we're super excited about that.
And what, as far as we talked about, like, you said something about conveying programming, right? Was that, what was that discussion we had? We're talking about programming, your thought process that you see in the tech world.
Well, I think we were touching on maybe cross-pollination and, mm-hmm. you know, my belief that some, like, there are conferences that are very specific to a single industry. You know, I'm going here because it is about advanced manufacturing, or this mm-hmm. is only about digital marketing, or this one over here, it's only about pitch events. You know, start, and, you know, in my mind, we try to take a kind of a generalist approach to this, invite people from those multiple industries with the key kind of interlocking part of it being that they're scalable businesses and they're all they're either tech businesses or tech enabled, which almost everyone is tech enabled today. But because they're coming from all these different perspectives, different backgrounds, they will share ideas with each other. They'll find talent in unique ways that they weren't considering before. They'll form unique partnerships. They'll do business, find clients. So that to me, and that comes from my music background too. You know, you put it, different people together. This guy plays jazz. This guy plays techno. This guy plays alt country. Sometimes you cook up the most, you know, unique, interesting thing that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise. And I think creatives, that's natural to creatives, you know, mm-hmm. filmmakers, musicians, they realize the genres are just manufactured ways to sell things. You know, that's the business side of it. Genres mm-hmm. don't really exist to people who dive out deep down into a creative process and, you know, try to reveal something cool and new and interesting. So with Dig South, I try to do that in a little way by mixing creatives with very, you know, strong business types, with VCs. And I think that mixture is a lot more interesting, combustible, fun than just any kind of single conference model.
Well, I mean, that's another thing that's interesting if you live in the South, too. Said that Silicon Valley and Hollywood did not communicate. Now, and you know, in the South, to some extent, that, you know, creatives mm-hmm. didn't communicate with brick and mortar, or what we would consider brick and mortar, or you know, an established business, right? So now, you're seeing a mesh of, you know, a high level company integrating creative, mm-hmm. right? You're seeing that more, and that's kind of what I right. caught with your narrative yes. in a way, because, you know, and you still making music today, you know, and still having that creative process, but, you know, intertwining that in an intelligent way in the tech world, I think is very interesting to me, and is what I caught on diving deeper when I, mm-hmm. You text me or whatever, I said, I want to dive deeper
right
into mm-hmm. what you're doing. And that was my overall takeaway. Mm-hmm. And we haven't discussed that yet, but I didn't know that when I first met you.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of old guard industries with magazine publishing and newspapers or radio, you know, people only had two or three ways to get their message out, and they would have to follow those channels and they'd have to follow that formula, and they were just put in the box. But today, a lot of people who run businesses, they have their own in-house creative, their own, you know, studio. They have their own social media channels. They've got a blog. They can get those messages out. They can frame it and be creative with it. And that opens the door for what you're describing, where creators are collaborating with brick and mortar, with traditional businesses, and they're just you know, creating their own studio.
Well, that's one thing we've discovered, and it's kind of like when I got into comedy, you know, reverse engineered the whole comedy industry on how we did business, because everything that I did was completely opposite of industry. And I kind of went in, and when I looked at the landscape in the comedy world, to me, the way they operated was somewhat of a dinosaur operation, which gave me a big opportunity, right?
Right.
So now, and you talk about marketing, we're moving into this B&B model and looking at some of these professions and me hearing the response of some of these professionals that we've worked with and looking at this industry, this digital marketing piece in some of these dinosaur professions, they have no idea. I mean, I think there's a huge upside there because the education and capabilities are not known by these professions.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And it's a big learning curve, but I do see a big opportunity for someone like us getting into that space with a B&B model and using this creative process that I used in comedy, using it with, a profession that's been around for 50 years. I think there's a big upside to that. And I think that translates to what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, all those cycles repeat, you know.
Yeah.
So in 2000, the first startup I was involved in, we were just building websites for people here in Charleston, and we had this idea for a mini disc that was going to be we called a digi business card. So we'd videotape you do a testimonial, we put it on the disc, print the name, you'd hand them out, but nobody had a player for the disc. YouTube didn't exist. And, you know, and so the whole, and people couldn't understand on King Street why you needed a website. They said, oh, everybody just picks up the city paper. Or they read, you know, there's a guidebook. We don't need a website. And we just thought that was crazy, you know, where other parts of the country, you know, had already gotten it. So fast forward to today, same sort of mindset. People are saying, man, I don't know what this Web3 thing is or metaverse or NFTs. I don't need to pay attention to that. And maybe they don't for now, but we can come in and help them explore that. Look at it, think about it, and they're going to need it in 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, or they're going to get left behind if they haven't paid attention to what's trending and what's evolving. And some other business is going to come along that understands that and gets it and is going to steal all their business if they're not paying attention to the evolution of technology.
Yeah, and I think you have to be open-minded too. I mean, if you're out there in your old school, right. You know, whatever it is, just be open-minded because you're going to have to deal with it.
Yes.
To some extent in your life, whether it's you personally, whether it's your kids or whatever. So I think you have to be open-minded and really dive deep and see where those things go to determine what the outcome is going to be, at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, I have deep respect for businesses that started as a mom and pop and are old school and legendary and have been in the South for 50, 100 years. But if they're around that long today, they probably are having a more open mindset. You know, they're hiring people or bringing in groups that can help them understand what's happening as technology evolves, as new, you know, platforms arise, how to transition to an e-commerce platform, for example, how to use Shopify to do that, something like that. So yeah, just keeping that open mindset is the way to go.
And maybe our epiphany moment is maybe that's what you can hang your hat on is, you know, us wanting to create a mini Hollywood here. You know, where the scales are smaller because we're delivering to a different type of distribution, right? But
right.
It's still entertainment. It's still content.
Yep.
And looking at, you know, the epiphany moment for you, I think, is looking at these brick and mortars and how do they integrate this new technology that they never have before to make their business grow exponentially and be a leader in their profession.
Yeah, and I think many of them realize that today. And, you know, I think the cat's definitely out of the bag, so to speak. But yeah, the opportunities are interesting and new again, more exciting right now, I think, than they were, say, 5 years ago. Just mm-hmm. I think that the technology has evolved to such a place that there's so much hype. Sure, a lot of businesses are going to fail. A lot of people are going to lose a lot of money around crypto and around blockchain-based products, because that's the way it always happens at the beginning of a new technology. And but they'll keep figuring it out, and it'll keep evolving, and the real stuff will separate, and it will elevate, mm-hmm. And so people who follow that and stay on board will do fine. Their businesses will do well.
May 11th, May 13th, right? TD Arena.
Yes.
That's College of Charleston's gymnasium.
That's right. DigSouthTechSummit.com or DigSummit.com. Both URLs will get you there to the info.
Walk us through the convention, like mm-hmm. the 11th, 12th, 13th. Walk us through each day.
Yeah. So May 11th, the opening night, we do a party called Upload Charleston. It's sponsored by Charleston County Economic Development. It'll be on the yard of what's called the Cistern Yard at the College of Charleston. It's a spectacular, probably the most beautiful spot on the peninsula that's not on the water. Framed with ancient oaks. The building's 200 years old. And we're going to have a ton of really cool projection mapping and lighting and make it interesting, fun way for everybody to fly into town, meet and greet. Get up the next day. We have sessions all day on the 12th in emerging technology, business growth, digital marketing. People do deep dives into that, keynotes, panels, workshops. We'll close the day with a great happy hour on site, and then we'll roll into a comedy show with Bang Productions. Get up on Friday, May 13th, we'll have the sessions again, and then we'll have two pitch events. So one pitch event is an open call, startups from all over the South, multiple different industries. The other one will be more focused on fintech, NFTs, blockchain developed platforms. So we'll have those two pitch events, then we'll close on that Friday afternoon, and that's a wrap.
You just recorded an album.
Right.
I was like, who's this 25-year-old kid singing this song? It sounded like a young yeah. beat. You want to tell us a little bit about this music you just recorded? And I said you should put more of that personality mm-hmm. into your event, Dig South.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had like kind of a fearless stage, personality or persona that I love to get up there and play and perform, write songs. In this case, I hadn't played in years, been several years, and the pandemic hits, we're all locked up. I was super bored, and I called this friend of mine, Gary, who I knew played guitar, but I never jammed with him. So he and I and another friend of mine, Mark Davis, Gary Christmas, we just started playing random songs. I wrote a couple, and I had one that I'd never recorded, co-wrote one with Gary, Mark contributed. And then we went into a studio with Matt Zutel, Coast Records here in Charleston, and just banged them out with him, with Matt on drums, and just kind of put it out there. But a lot of it was just like, what are we going to do? This pandemic sucks. We got to get something creative going. And really it like got me back in the game. So my chops are back. I'm playing a lot, having fun. We're going to book some gigs, and I haven't done that in, 7-8 years.
And what would you classify your music as? Where would you put that?
I would just call it rock and roll. I mean, I just feel like that's what it is. There are a lot of subgenres in that. We sometimes play Americana kind of stuff. Other times something like David Bowie or, even Stone Roses, a little kind of 90s psychedelic rock. There's psychedelic tinges to it, but it's rock and roll.
Well, if you're out there and check out Stanfield Gray, what do you go under on the music side? What is the...
This band's called Soundcraft.
Soundcraft. All right. Well, one thing I picked up on in that is check out Soundcraft, Stanfield Gray's music, the writing and some of the intelligence in the writing and what was being said, I think, was interesting.
Thank you.
Right.
And I have a crazy mind. Never know where it's going to go.
And I said, Stan, you got to translate that to Dig South. Yeah. That should be your look, and so forth. So check that out. And cool, man. We should do this. We should do a tech checkup, mm-hmm. some type of tech checkup with the Unimpressed podcast more often.
Maybe we do a tech check. Yeah,
maybe we do do it once a month or something like that.
Yeah, like check your head, check your tech.
Yeah, tech check. There you go. We need to trademark that too. Cool. Well, I appreciate you come talking to us. Look forward to what the future may bring for us, mm-hmm. Hooking up and Yeah, this is Stanfield Gray, and I'm John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.